Bless up for tuning in to Project Cheney. Magic happens when you question everything. Conspirituality becomes reality, weirdness is welcomed, and it's okay to change your mind. Big up yourself.
Hey, you guys. Welcome back to another episode of Project Cheney. As always, I'm Cheney. And it's been a while. I want to fill you in on why it's been a while. And I thought about doing bullet points for this show. And I thought about keeping like a calendar to run through it with you guys. But I think just running off the cuff and rolling a joint and hanging out with you guys is kind of the best way to go. So let me fill you in on my vision quest that I've been going through. If you listen to previous episodes of Project Cheney, I'm going to hit this real quick. If super lugs, you should know this about me. It might come up later on in the story again. It may not, but it may. So, it's kind of a big story, and I don't even know where to begin. But if you listen to previous episodes of Project Cheney, you'll know that I had a spleen ish happen. You'll know that I thought I injured myself at a job and that I thought I took like blunt force trauma to my spleen. And it made me miss some episodes. It made me get off schedule back when. And, you know, I've had a couple of friends I should fill you into. Like, I want to go play with my Maria. I want to go play with the spiders. I want to go hang out with One on One. I want to go on Paranoid American. I want to go and hang out with Old World Florida. I want to have the Twitchy Witch on. I want to hang out with Marisa. I have like so many plans on stuff I want to do for you guys and that I had in the works for you guys. And then I got sidetracked a little bit. And dude, it really took me out. It took me out like next level. I do know alchemy, so I'm grateful for my journey and that I'm here to hang out and chat with you guys. Yeah, so grateful for that. So back to my spleen. Let me put this out just so I don't become annoying, like Snoop Dogging this, cheaping this beautiful pink Blazing Susan joint wrap over here. So, and you know, I definitely have silver linings of my journey. So if you listen to previous episodes, my spleen, they thought it was blunt force trauma. The last time I went to the doctor, he put two hands on my stomach and like touched my spleen and was like, it seems like your spleen's going down. And that was that. So I left the doctor and life went on and I had injury. Like I felt pain in my side, but it never was the pain that sent me to the emergency room for my spleen the first time. So I live in pain. I have a high pain threshold. And I know when people say that they have a high pain tolerance, they always take it as a good thing. I've laid now and totally realized this is my trauma. Like this is because somebody, and I don't think it's trauma that we remember. I think this is baby trauma. And maybe even in the 80s, it was a normal thing that you would just let your baby cry. Maybe this is before my parents even had me, like my lungs collapsed when I was a child. And so I was in the ER at a really young age, you know, like birth, like I was born and my lungs collapsed. And then I had to go to Miami Hospital and I was away from my mother and parents for a little while. And so, and then back when I was born, you didn't hold babies in the hospital. You didn't have to. So I think, you know, even that time, like that first few weeks of birth, like not getting answered to every cry, maybe you just build up a pain tolerance. I don't know why. So I had this pain tolerance and I was going to work every day and I was doing this thing and I was working a ton more hours because we were in the middle of season at work. And to give you like a time frame, maybe at the end of January to February is when all this starts peaking. And like just standing at work, I started to feel like a way, Like I started to feel like my back was on fire, like the small of my back, and I had no appetite at all. I was not paying attention to how little I was eating. My wife was watching me and she was like, this is not kosher. Like this bitch is taking in 500 calories a day. Like this isn't kosher. The only reason I think I was taking in a little more calories and like the way the universe works and like a blessing is I was driving home this pregnant girl from work every night from work. And I feel like being around her, my motherly instincts kicked in. Like she's a young pregnant girl and I just wanted to feed her every night, like every night on our way home from work. And so we were going and eating food that I don't typically eat. I don't really eat fast food all the time, but I just wanted to give her something. Not that I think it's best for the baby, but I think some calories is better than no calories. So really whatever she was craving, I would drive her through on the way home. So I would get something for myself and gorge something at the end of the night. Looking back at it, grateful for those fast food calories. Even if they were fast food calories, this is where I feel like transmutation of everything is so important. Like sometimes it's the only things you can get. Sometimes it's the only things you can afford, not just with your dollar, but with your time. So whatever, it is what it is. I'm grateful for the calories now. So I'm starting to get in so much pain where I actually feel like I'm fucking dying. And work is getting harder and harder to get through the night. I now give myself a little bit of grace that it would have been easier to get through the night had I not been maybe dying. And I even think to my last few nights at work, like little, these are trauma things. I just wanted to finish a couple more chores at work because we had a private party coming in. For those of you that don't know, I was a sous chef for a really amazing chef. And so we had a private party that Monday and I just wanted my ovens to sparkle for this private party. So I stayed at work my very last night at work extra to clean these fucking ovens. And I had really dear friends to me. Like I was in severe pain and I had really dear friends and including my wife that were like, we should go to the emergency room today. You should go to the emergency room today. But I knew something inside my body was so severe that when I walked through those emergency room doors, everything was going to change in my life. I knew everything was going to be fucking different. I didn't know how. I didn't know to what consequence. I didn't know to what length. But I knew the Cheney I knew before was no longer going to be there anymore. Like instinctively, I don't know if it was my intuition. I don't know if it was just like quantum, but I just knew. I just don't know if it was how well I knew my body. So I'm starting to get in this kind of pain that one day I was actually in the shower and I thought about recording an episode for y'all just in case anything happened to me. Like I didn't know what was going on with me, but I knew something was up. Like I knew something was fucked up and I wanted there to be something on my computer that was like, I didn't want to leave you guys without a goodbye. And even that, like I said it out loud one time to my Maria, which I knew was kind of getting cryptic, but this is probably like the last week building up to me going to the hospital. And I was like, you know, I recorded a goodbye episode for my podcast. And she was like, go to the fucking ER, you fucking stupid bitch. And that comes up again later on in the stories, because for those of you that don't know, we have the same birthday. And so the way we love each other is kind of hard and rough, like two scorpions would. And I appreciate it later on. Like it always makes me laugh 100% of the times when she does it. And I think she knows I appreciate it because everybody else around you is coddly. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to go to the ER. I'm waiting till after my first day off. I just want a day off. And people are like, go now. And I'm like, no, tomorrow I'm going to sit in the sun. I'm just going to sit in the sun. I'm going to lay out in the yard and I'm going to like enjoy one last day being myself. And everyone's like, stop being dramatic. Just go to the fucking ER. Like everything's going to be fine. And I'm like, I don't know if it is. Like, so I was about to tell you this other story, and maybe I will, because I kind of want to put all this together. I'm recording myself in video right now, and I'm going to give myself the grace of releasing the audio to this first, because my audio listeners have always been so loyal to me. And so I want this to come out in audio first, and then I am recording myself in video as well. And I have pictures I've taken the whole time that I want to put together. So it will go on my YouTube channel. I'll figure out a clever name and everything else. So I sit out in the sun one last day and I feel this pain in my left side. For those of you that don't know, your spleen is right where Christ is cut. So like every time you see a depiction of Christ where the Spear of Destiny slices his rib, like under his rib cage or what looks like his rib, that's right where your spleen is. So I go to the hospital at the emergency room. I go to the emergency room and I tell them like, hey, I think something's up with my spleen, yada, yada, yammer. They look at my records and shit. They call for whatever medical stuff they have to call for, you know, for if you're going to the hospital for a CAT scan, I'll just say this too. Make sure they call a CAT scan with contrast. Make sure they call a CAT scan with contrast. That may or may not come up. Some things I don't want to say on here yet because, you know, there's other reasons for that. But so they call for whatever they have to call for. I go to the get a room at the hospital. I think I'm in ICU. I don't remember this part now. And I might be loosey goosey on some of the dates and some of the specifics. And I know when I put this out, I'm going to wish that, like, I'm gonna like listen to it while I edit it, and it's already gonna make me feel a way to release it, and I'm already gonna know I'm gonna miss some things, so I'm trying to give myself grace with that too. So I think they put me in ICU at this time, and they put me in ICU, and they come in and they're like, hey, you have your spleen exploded. And it exploded into your pancreas and into your stomach. And like 2 weeks before, 3 weeks before, something changed in my body that I knew something hurt. And my boss sent me home early from work during a season night, which never happens. And she would never send me home early of everybody in the restaurant. It never has happened before. So, but she's like, you look away. You need to go home. So she sent me home and then she left me home for a week. Every day she checked on me and she's like, what's up? What's up? What's up? So she just kind of left me home for a week. And so I rested and everything. But and then at the end of that week, one of the nights me and my wife went shopping and then out to eat. And that whole night I felt like I'm going to die. Like something is so wrong with me. Like I tried to have a tough face, but something just fell off. So this brings us into like, I'm at the hospital and it's like February between 7th, 8th, 9th. And they're like, hey, your spleen exploded. So my spleen had exploded 3 weeks before. And my body, instead of giving me like some kind of shock or some kind of infection, it built this like barrier, like this sac, almost this clear fluid around my spleen, like it was protecting me. it's crazy. So they're like, we have to take your spleen's fissured into your stomach. And I was tasting something different, like something was up with my stomach, like I all this stuff was going on. They're like, we have to take part of your pancreas, we have to take part of, I don't know, my stomach, pancreas, spleen, and then one other thing. I just heard my phone go off. That's so unprofessional. Let me turn it off. And I should also tell you too, I was taking pictures of myself the few weeks leading up to this in the mirror. And it wasn't that I was just losing weight. Like I was watching the scale drop, but it was that my muscles were atrophying. Like all the muscles on my body were falling. So by the time I got admitted to the hospital, I was under 125 pounds, like with my clothes on. And so they're like, all this happened, your spleen exploded into your stomach, which is where my appetite had kind of gone to. And then they had to take anything that my spleen touched. And so it was like this big operation. They're like, we have this doctor here that just happens to be here tomorrow. Otherwise, our hospital wouldn't do this. We would send you away to one of the bigger hospitals in the state, but you need to get this done ASAP. And so I'm like, okay, do whatever. I knew it was going to be big like this. So did I get that amount of information right then? I don't think they gave me that information then. They knew they were going to have to do some shit to my spleen. I feel like they did give me that information then. I just remember, this is like the crazy part where it gets blurry, because now they start giving me drugs. They realize I'm in pain. So once the painkillers hit my body, y'all, I'm not good on painkillers. Opioids have never been my drug. I'm allergic to all that stuff. So when they hit my body, it makes me feel like Molly at first. Like I feel like I'm rolling, but wait before it hits me, and then I feel nausea. So I don't partake in any of that stuff. So it hits me extra, but I don't partake in anything. I'm the girl that hasn't had an antibiotic at least for 20 years, like since 1996. Homegirl hasn't had an antibiotic. So maybe even longer than that. Like I don't even know when the last time I've put anything that wasn't like marijuana or a psychedelic in my body. I'm pretty pure. Probably like Vegas. I was thinking pretty pure. And then I was thinking of like naughty LA times in Vegas, but that's a different story. So, I'm at the hospital. I'm about to go into surgery. I remember they put a scopolamine patch on my ear, and I remember the nurse standing in front of me, and I feel like she either told me I had a bladder infection or a urinary tract infection. I never had either of those things before. And so I was like, oh, like I even looked at my wife like for validation, like that's the pain I've been feeling. Like I was thinking easy breezy, beautiful cover girl, like a little UTI done and done, little antibiotics in my IV. We're out of here. We're out of here, sis. I feel like that might have been right after she was in. Might have been when the doctor came and told me everything that was going on and what the surgery was going to be. But they put a scopolamine patch behind my ear. And so I was like, oh, is that the drug that makes you really susceptible to things? And the doctor almost looked at me like, how do you know this? And I'm like, I don't want to tell you how I know this. But it was just funny. It's one of the last things I remember before going into surgery. And so I go into surgery. I remember coming out of surgery and wheeling past like a doorway, and my mom and my sister and my wife were in the doorway. And apparently other people were in the doorway too. I don't remember anything else. I get wheeled into a room. I wake up however long later. I have a Dilaudid drip on a button. They're like, you can press this whenever, and you know, Dilaudid drip. I'm in and out of sleep. And apparently every time I go in and out of sleep, I also do like, I'm not only talking in my sleep, my hands are moving. Like I'm doing activity with my hands in my sleep. I don't know if I'm plating food. I don't know if I'm sewing a blanket. I don't know what's going on. I don't really remember any of it. I don't really remember too much of my stay in the hospital. They didn't let me have any food by mouth. And when they were in the surgery, I do remember them coming in and telling me a ton of important information, but I was on drugs in a level that I don't take drugs. And apparently they had hit my diaphragm. So they got like 80% of my exploded spleen out, but they had hit my diaphragm and almost punctured it. So they had to stop the surgery right away, because apparently your diaphragm's like a tomato. And if you puncture it, it'll explode all over and there's not really anything they can do about it. So they were like, let's leave this diaphragm alone. And because they did so much surgery on the left side of my body, they also had to incubate my left side of my lung, which as a child, as a preemie child, that's the same exact side I was incubated on as a child. So I have like a scar, like on the left side of my breast that's always been there. Usually they were like, that'll go away with age. Like most scars, they get smaller, but this one hasn't. Maybe it's the kind of skin that your breast skin is. I don't fucking know, but it hasn't. It's gotten bigger. And so it was weird to be incubated there again. I had all kinds of tubes. I'd never had a catheter before, and I'm giving you guys TMI. But I feel like it's important that I'm honest about this situation the whole way through, because I don't know who in life's going to be going through this kind of shit. And I feel like that's our goal here, is like, that's how we heal each other, is by coming up with words to help each other through the processes of all of life's traumas. So, have tubes coming out of everywhere, catheter for the first time. A tube here. I had a tube down in my nose. I can't remember, but I feel like I had one in my mouth as well. But I don't think I had one in my mouth. I think they might have taken that out after surgery. And then I just was on a no food or water by mouth order. So that was all going down. And fuck, I was in the hospital like a week in the ICU. And I will say this whole experience, if you listen to the show, because it's so fucking ironic. The whole thing's so ironic. I'm the girl that's so anti-mask and vaccines, which is why it was hard to for me to walk into this hospital to begin with. Like, the Nazi regime that's been going on in this country for the few years has put its own trauma on top of me having already hospital trauma that I realize is so deep-seated in me. But in going through this whole experience, I realized there's a lot of great fucking people in medicine. And I think maybe that's how we have to go through a lot of life's things, is like a lot of like the school system might suck, but there might be a lot of great, great teachers. Like the system of like the police might suck, but there might be a lot of great police officers. You know, like we might have to start doing this a lot more and not grouping people together, not just by political thought, but by what we do for a living or where we live or what color our skin is. Like, you know, like, the color of the skin, that's an obvious one. Like that, I mean, that's obvious what we shouldn't do, skin, religion, but maybe these kind of other things we need to not lump together. And by we, I'm saying me. Like a lot of this has been, I just realized the work I have to do. And maybe even how stubborn we are as people sometimes, I feel like all this had to happen to me. Like this is how stubborn I am. And I'm grateful for my whole journey. I guess I should just go on. So at the hospital, ton of drugs, doing weird shit with my hands, tubes all in my body, wife sitting there every day. Just every time I pretty much wake up, she's sitting there, which that alone, that her being the pinnacle of this, in this whole experience. But my family and my friends, some people you guys might listen to or know, some people you might have never heard of, but waking up and seeing her there every day, and the people visiting me, and the gifts and the flowers and the well wishes and the prayers and the meditations and the energy, it takes my breath away. Like, it fills my heart to such a grateful way that tears of gratitude are some of the best tears. Anyway, so I wake up and see her on and off. I'm on a ton of drugs. I'm in so much pain. Like, I have a scar down my stomach, and I just can't even fathom that I'm laying in the hospital, and my wife can only stay there for visiting hours. And then I have to be alone with my thoughts for all this other time. And I'm looking down at my skinny fucking body, and it doesn't look like me at all. And my legs are so skinny, and my stomach is cut up, and I'm in this little gown, and I've lost, like, I'm a modest girl, and I've lost all my modesty. The amount of people that are coming in and just ripping your clothes off on a regular basis at the hospital, and you're only sleeping for 45 minutes at a time because somebody has to come and check your blood pressure and your heart rate, stick something in your IV, and stick something in your stomach, and empty bags, and not bring you food, not bring you water. It's really weird. The second out of surgery, I craved, for my first craving that I had, I wanted plain Cheerios with honey on them. This isn't a craving I've ever had before. I'm not a Cheerio gal, but I wanted just Cheerios with honey. Like, I craved this thing for days. And I was talking about it with somebody about how people that get organ transplants, sometimes they crave what the organ donor liked. And so we were wondering if that was true maybe with blood, because I had a lot of blood donated to me. So anyway, that's a conspiracy thing. You know, keep it conspiracy. It is Project Cheney, but so is this. And there's going to be a ton of conspiracy to come up later on about this. So I'm in the hospital for X amount of days, and I'm sure a bunch of stuff was told to me in the hospital. I just don't remember any of it. And so all this important stuff going on. And I do remember one day, Let me blow my nose real quick. Sorry, this is so unprofessional. I do remember one of the days a nurse comes in. Like, y'all, they cut through my abs. So even pulling myself up in bed was like, it took everything in me. And really, if I'm going to be honest with you, the second the nurses got me up out of bed and put me in a chair, I was not going back to that bed. It hurt so fucking bad. That was like day three or four. And so the next 3 days, I just slept in this chair and sat in this chair and not ate in this chair. Anyways, one of the days I remember a nurse comes in to me and she's like, once you can make it blank amount of times around the corridor, and once you can take all these pills by mouth, and once you can take a shit on that toilet, you can go home. And I'm like, word, word, home girl, heard, taken, taken, got this. So somewhere in the next 24 hours, I was like, check, check, and check. I'm going to figure out how to do these things. I don't care if I have to blow my asshole out on that toilet. I'm going to sit there for hours. I'm going home. So, and I'm going to walk around this corridor, even if it hurts, and I'm going to take all these pills, even if my throat, because I had a, you know, I guess, when they put the air tube down or whatever for the surgery, it hurt so bad. I was like, I'm going to do all these things. And so they don't have to keep sticking my IV with the pills. I'll start asking for them by mouth, done and done. So I'm checking off these things. They were about to put me in a room because I was in ICU the whole time. But I didn't realize at this hospital, they didn't do surgeries as big as mine until later on. And that's why they kept me in that place the whole time. And all the nurses were so fantastic. Like, I still want to do something really great for them. They were just so warm during my stay. Some of them cried with me. But my last nurse, she comes in and she's like, I saw you were unvaccinated on your sheet. And she's like, can I talk to you and ask why? And I'm like, bitch, because you know I don't hold back. So I'm like, blah, 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 blah. She's like, that's why I moved to Florida, blah, 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 blah. And so she's telling me her whole story and she's all conspiracy minded. And I hate saying the word conspiracy, but y'all know what I mean. What am I going to say? Truth movement. Like, y'all know what I mean there too. Let's not dissect words here. This is Project Cheney still. We don't dissect words. So she was all warm to me and she just kept sticking shit in the bag, like pretty much anything she could find to grab for me to send me home with. She sent me home with gauze, like that I didn't even need, like big gauze and stuff. I did have to change wounds on my stomach, but not the kinds of gauze she was giving me. She was just grabbing me everything. So she gets me all ready. I finally get to go home, y'all. When I get to go home, I feel like I get to put my brain on straight a little bit, but it takes a couple of days. I'm on painkillers. Everybody has to stop by and see me. I'm like laid up on the couch, but because of the painkillers, I'm like kind of cordial and in this like lucid state. I can't stay on the painkillers for long. Some people told me I should have because it's good for your nervous system to calm down. I have this thing with pain that I also want to feel it because I feel like I'm going to hurt myself. Like if I'm not aware of what my body can and can't do without the pain, then I shouldn't push my body there. I don't know if that's my athlete brain, but it's not because I want to sit in pain the whole time. It's not because I'm a masochist. It's because I feel like just to get up and go to the bathroom, like, should I be doing this or not? Should I be laying this way? Like, it feels comfortable. I want to pass out, but is my body actually happy this way? Or is this just the painkillers? So I like to just be really present in my flesh. So I didn't really get down with the painkillers the whole time, but plus, I didn't realize the toll of getting put under on your body, like all the anesthesia of being put under in surgery. Maybe the scopolamine patch probably had a little something to do with it too. And so I have bandages all over my body. I just feel dirty. I haven't had like a real shower in a week. I've had like little sponge baths here and there. So I'm laying on my couch. And as I come out of the painkillers a little bit, within that first week, I don't think I went to the doctor yet. I feel like maybe my wife told me, or maybe I did go to the doctor. Like I had a doctor's appointment that I had to go to a doctor in my town, and I didn't realize when I got back the state of it. And so I remember being like, holy shit, like it all really sitting on me that somewhere I got the information from my wife or from a doctor, or when it finally sank in my brain, maybe somebody told me at the hospital and it finally sank in, I have cancer. Like, I have to go to a cancer doctor. Like, oh, this just isn't my spleen. This is something bigger than my spleen. Like, somewhere in all my lucid drugs, it took a minute for this to set in. Like, I was in so much pain and healing. Oh, maybe my brain wouldn't even let me hear it. Almost like Westworld, where it's like the robots can't see what will hurt them. Like, my brain was like, bitch, you're not ready for this information yet. Like, homegirl, you ain't ready. And so I was so weak and so skinny and laying on the couch and looking at my body. And I'm not even in any shape. Like, I'm in the process of fighting a dragon. The dragon feels like it's winning. And now I have the information that I have another dragon to fight now, like now. And so I have to start chemo. And before I start chemo, you know, I go to the cancer doctor, and I have stage 4 lymphoma, non-Hodgkin's type B stage 4 lymphoma. I have to have super aggressive chemo. So I'm organic girl. I'm girl that's, I don't even want to put a vaccine in my body. And I have to put something that I would never believe in if I didn't have stage 4 cancer. And before I get this start chemo, I have to go and I have to get a port put in my chest, because the poison is so poisonous that they're putting in my body, it will burn your veins out. And so I have to have a port like above my left tit, below my shoulder. So right on this part of my chest, right? If you're watching the podcast version of this on YouTube, right around the P on my chest. So I have a vintage Epcot shirt on. So there's like, anyway, you guys will see if you're watching the video version. So I have to get this port put in my chest, which means I have to get put under again. I don't have the anesthesia out of my body yet from the first time. I have to get put under again to have surgery to get a port put in my chest right here, because it's so poisonous. And I get told I'm going to lose my hair. So if you're also watching the video version of this, you'll be like, instantly, if you weren't thinking it already, you'll be like, oh shit. Yeah, I don't have any fucking hair right now. So I have a cute little hat on. Good thing I'm the type of gal that wears hats. And I also, if I took all my lady friends and put them in a room and somebody came in with a gun and they were like, somebody in here has to shave their head, I feel like all my lady friends would just look at me and be like, that's you, right? And I'd be like, yeah, it's me. You're right. I should probably be the one to shave my head here. So yeah, I am as bald as Joe Rogan, which I sometimes laugh at, because I did a meme of myself as Aleister Crowley for my Aleister Crowley episode with Mark, Mystic Mark. If you haven't checked that out from My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast, if you haven't checked that out, it is on YouTube and in the audio version, and it's definitely worth a listen. But me magic's real, and I did a Aleister Crowley meme or of myself as Aleister Crowley, bald as the Dickens. Well, you got what you wish for there, kid. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. So I find out all this stuff, and I'm like laying on my couch, and I'm so fucking dark. I go into this dark place. Like, I'm so injured and I'm so weak and I'm in so much pain and I have cancer, and I'm looking at my body and it looks like I have cancer, and I don't even know how I have anything in me for this fight. And I'm just so sad and I'm so mad, and I legitimately feel like I woke up on a different timeline. Like, this wasn't my body I was in. How did this even happen? How is it me? I was looking around at like men that look like they have gout and ladies that look like they don't take care of themselves. And I was like, I'm young. How is this here? How am I here? And the type of cancer I have is like, it's not genetic. It's like, I wasn't in Vietnam. I didn't live by the Teflon plant. How do I have this? How didn't they catch this the last time I was at the hospital? How did they let me leave? Like, I just had all this stuff playing through my head. And I get told I have to start chemo. You know, I have the port in. I start chemo soon. Okay. And, you know, me and my wife discuss our kind of plan, what we can and can't do. We're still going to play things as organic as possible. We're going to do the quote unquote science route, but we're also going to do our little hippy dippy natural path route and go from there. My mom's an uber Christian. She's praying for me all the time. I have a lot of great friends and listeners. They send me a great gifts like healing crystals and blood cleansing crystals and candles and things. And so I'm getting good energy from all forms. I have flowers all in my house. It's beautiful. And I'm just laying there and I'm sad. And I can't believe any of this. And so I don't even know how I feel about the chemo. It's like there were some people in my life, like my woo-woo friends, I didn't even want to tell that I was having to do this route because I didn't feel good about it. I didn't feel good about it at all. So how was I going to like fill them with, yeah, I'm about to stick poison in my body and I'm about to take the full medical route and not do anything woo-woo. Like I didn't know how to even tell them that this was what I was about to do. And so I'm just laying there feeling sorry for myself, sad, mad, depressed. All the demons, all my demons are the loudest voices in my head. And I have to start chemo. And I'm in this fucking body that's not mine. And so I start chemo. And I remember laying in that chair where I do my chemo is like a room. There's a lot of people in the room, all getting different chemo treatments, all they're getting different kinds of things done. And mostly old ladies. There's a couple of old men that come and go, but mostly old ladies. And I'm by far the youngest person in this room. And I'm sitting there all day and I'm so weak that some of the medicine they give me in the chemo treatment, I actually am like, is this slowing up my heart? Is it hard for me to breathe right now? Like I go into a dark place in the chemo treatment. They have to put on a different kind of coat over themselves to give me this one red medicine that then the nurse informs me. This is called the Red Devil. And I don't like that name. I tell her, I don't like that name. We're going to have to transmute it. And also my first treatment, my nurse, granted my port was swollen. I just got it like 4 days before. But the way she stuck me the first time to like set my IV up, she hurt me and I said ow twice and she didn't stop. It was just like, I have a friend who's an animal trainer and she calls it a trust bank. When you're training an animal that you have to slowly build a trust bank with them. And when you give them, when you earn enough trust from them, then they'll do what you want. And so it's all about building that trust. And I was thinking in my brain, like, this bitch done depleted my trust bank with her. She done depleted my trust bank. I was so mad that it took like, I was there for 8 hours for my first treatment, maybe 9 hours. And, you know, I was there the longest and the youngest. And I remember one of the women walking out of the room. She was there a pretty long time too. And she walked past me and she said, cheers. And I just thought that was like funny old lady banter. Like I liked it. But the old women in the room gave me inspiration. Like I was the weakest one in the chair and I just didn't know how I was going to survive this. Like I just felt like maybe the cancer had taken my body too far and I was already at stage 4 and I didn't know if it was in my head or in my bone marrow and I didn't know what the fuck was going to happen and I didn't have any energy to fight and I was just laying there getting this poison in my body. And my wife and I, we had found out before that the chemotherapy, you're not supposed to be around pregnant ladies or children under the age of 13 for 8 hours after treatment. And so I was like, I have this theory. If you're not supposed to be around pregnant ladies, you shouldn't be around anyone. Like if pregnant ladies aren't supposed to do it, maybe no one's supposed to do it. So I was just like, let's make a separate room of the house because we have a spare room. I'm like, let's turn it into like my chemo room. So the night I get home from chemo, I can stay in there the whole night and then take a shower before I'm around our animals or you. And then this way because I was also so fucking weak. I was like, if the animals get overwhelming to me, or if you want company over, I can just have a room to just go in and be in. So we had this extra room of our house. So I get my whole first cancer treatment and I go lay in this room and I just lay in my own thoughts. I just lay in my own thoughts and I go to dark places again. And yeah, just feeling sorry for myself. And it felt like night after night I was in this room and I really had thought, like, I didn't know when day was or when night was. I just knew what kind of pain I was in. I knew how hard it was for everything for me to put into my mouth, for me to eat and just swallow water felt like fucking acid to me. And going to the bathroom and taking a shower. And I remember sitting on the shower floor every night and just being like, a little better every day. You're going to get a little better every day. And I was so little and looking at my tiny body in the shower. And I didn't know if I believed it, but I was trying to stay with it. And somewhere maybe around the fifth or sixth night, I walked by the calendar one night to throw something away. Our calendar hangs above our trash can. And I thought 3 weeks had gone by. I thought 3 physical weeks had gone by. And it hadn't even been a week yet. And I knew how long they told me I was going to have to receive this chemo treatment for. And I didn't know if I could do it. I didn't know how my body was physically going to take going through this and how I felt. Everything fucking hurt on me. And I was so little and my muscles were shivering. And it made me so sad to realize only 1 week had gone by. And I really had thought it was 3. Like, I felt like I was losing my fucking mind. And I laid in bed that night, and somewhere in the night, you know, my mom had gotten me pot drops, like THC drops, because everybody was telling me about Rick Simpson oil. And I told my mom about it. And I have some dear friends that also hooked me up with some separately. And so I started taking these pot drops. And over the period of like maybe the first 4 weeks, I had run out of the pot drops, or I told her I was getting close to running out. So she got me new ones. And so I took new pot drops and I lay there and I fell asleep and I woke up and I couldn't sleep. I felt like all the muscles in my body were twitching. Like, I felt like I was having, I just saw my Band-Aid on the camera and I was like, what is on my hand right now? And I was like, oh, okay, it's a Band-Aid. Anyways, the audio listeners didn't need that. Neither did the visual listeners. No one needed that, but there it is. So all my muscles were twitching and I was like, let me just take a little more pot drops and go back to sleep. So I took another vial of the pot drops, THC drops. Ooh. And I started like almost getting a panic attack. And I have a friend. You know how some of your friends, they're such light energy, you don't want to burden them with your darkest thoughts. And then you have some friends that are such dense energy, they can handle the darkest you. I was going to call my friend that can handle the densest energy. And she didn't answer. And it was all for a reason. And because I was in my poison room, it wasn't in my healing room, I should call it. I'm transmuting that. My healing room. I was like, let me go lay in my own bed with my wife. It's been enough days. I'm fine. So I went and laid on my own spot in the bed. And it's high. My bed's really high. So even getting into it with my pain was a lot. And I didn't like it because it even hurts more getting out of my bed than getting into my bed. And it's soft compared to the bed in the guest bedroom. So laying on my back hurt a lot. But I didn't care. I just needed to be by somebody. And I tried to call her, but she puts her phone on airplane mode to sleep. And it's not like it's far away. It's not like I had to walk far. So I get in bed and I'm like, I don't feel good. And I feel like I'm dying. And when I asked her this, like, am I dying? I didn't mean like, am I dying of cancer? I meant like, am I dying in the moment? Like I was hallucinating. And I felt like the whole world was coming to a singularity, and every text and every word, it was almost like my life was flashing before my eyes, like people and digital and analog and songs. And it was like everything was coming to a singularity. And all I kept seeing was that don't panic sign on the front of the Starman. You know how Tesla Elon Musk shot up that Tesla car, and how on the front of it, it said, don't panic. I just kept seeing that. And it was like every time I shut my eyes, it was almost like the Star Wars beginning with the don't panic sign. Like I felt like I was spaceman, like I was Starman, get it shooting to Mars. And I felt like when I woke up, this is what was going to happen. I was going to die and wake up in the chair like Arnold Schwarzenegger in Total Recall. And then somebody was going to say to me, do you want to play again? This was all going on, and I'm having a full panic attack. My body's twitching. I'm like, chemo's killing me. This is the worst thing I've ever been through. How can I do this again? And am I dying? And then I'm just having a full ego death, a full ego death. I'm laid up all night having a full ego death, losing my fucking mind. My wife saying all the right things. And oddly, I will tell you, my fear demon said shit that's never come out of my mouth before. All the fear, all the darkness, all the dread, all just came out of my fucking mouth, like stuff I've never fucking said, like the ugliest side of me, not at her, about myself, about life, about every, it was like dark as fuck. I felt like energies that never have sat on me. Like I felt like I was saying suicidal shit, depressive shit, dark fucking sad shit. Like it was just spewing out of my fucking mouth. And somewhere in the night I fell asleep. And I woke up and I felt a little different. I felt almost like Ebenezer Scrooge. Like I had been visited by the ghost of Christmas past, present, and future. And I laid on the couch and I was like, what the fuck? Like going over the whole trip in my head, how heady it was to have that kind of panic attack. And have all those thoughts and be so dark and be at the bottom of the well, like a darkness I had never felt before. And it made me feel like I was texting people, like even my brother, which I never text him thoughts with like tons of feeling. And I'm like depth. And even my mother, which I never even give her that side of myself. I was texting like, I'm scared. I'm scared. Like, I don't know what's going to happen. And so I text my friend Jada and I was like, I'm scared. Like, I don't deserve all these people around me. I don't deserve this love. And I was pushing, like everybody was wanting to come visit me and call me and chat with me and, you know, asking me like, come in a chat room or come and chat with us. But I was pushing everyone away. I didn't want anyone to see me like this. I didn't want anyone to feel sorry for me. And it was dawning on me in that moment that nobody kind of felt sorry for me. I was feeling sorry for me. And so I text my friend Jada that I felt guilty for all this love around me and all this support, like I didn't deserve it. And these are such wise words and I want to give them to you. So she was like, you know, and I was talking about my wife and how she was just taking care of me every second of the day, like doing all this shit for me. And she had her own company to take care of and me at home and all the animals, because any jobs that I was taking care of in the house were null and void. So, you know, I couldn't do any of those anymore. And I'm so fucking weak and I'm on this chemo. And I was like, I don't deserve all this love. Like, I'm such a gross person. And she said to me, all the people around you and all the love they're giving you, they're a reflection of your love. They're a reflection of all the love you've given. And it just floored me. It like, it did something of gratitude to me. And it just made me like think of each of my friends and family members and loved ones and you guys as individuals and how magic you are. And that meant I was magic too. And it just filled me with this like new fight in me that even if I was going to die in a fucking week, I wasn't going to leave my legacy of being like a Scrooge and being an asshole and being scared. Like, I wasn't scared anymore of dying. Like, something had happened to me that night. And I'm laying on the couch and I'm like, oh, I should take my pot drops. So I reach over and I look at the pot drops. And as I'm opening the vial, I realize the vial's like fucking huge compared to the last vial of the last pot drops I had. Hold on, let me blow my nose again. This is a cancer scarf, but since I'm not using it on my head, I usually wear hats. I always felt like when I wore scarves on my head, I always, because my hair was always so short, I always looked like I had cancer. So I tried not to wear like scarves like that. I always opted for the hat. So now I'm here. So I look at my pot drops and I'm like, holy shit, this vial's huge. And it dawns on me that this whole fucking night of darkness, this whole squeezing out of all my fear and dread, all happened because I OD'd on marijuana. Like, I had a whole dark night of the soul. And I was so grateful for it in that moment, almost like the same as a drug trip or DMT. Like, I was so grateful. Like, did I get it all out? Did I get out all my fear and dread in one night? And it was just a moment of gratitude that, unless you're a person that's ever OD'd on, you know, a psychedelic, you know, if you've taken a heroic dose, or if you're a person that has OD'd on marijuana on accident, if you haven't OD'd on marijuana, there's the couple that calls 911 and they're like, are we dying? And he's a cop or something. And he still calls 911. It's next level to OD on marijuana, but I was so grateful for it. And it sent me to this place that also made me contact my Reiki practitioner, and you've heard her on this show. I don't know what number it is right now, but I'll put it down below in the video episode. But it's Earth Angel Reiki. It's Bianca. And she's definitely been on Project Chaney in season one, and I'm going to have her back again. But it made me start Reiki with her. And I needed to start Reiki. I needed to remember my woo-woo. In my journey up to here, I wasn't doing anything like that. I was so in the 3D and so in the practical and so into like the dread of chemo, more almost than the dread of cancer. Like, I didn't even care about death or cancer as much as the dread of chemo and the poison in my body and how it was going to deteriorate me. And I realized my fear wasn't losing my body, even though I was looking down at it and it was so weak and feeble. I was kind of losing my mind. Because there's a thing called chemo brain, and your first week of chemo, but even now, like, pulling on my thoughts aren't as fast, which is another reason I realized I needed to keep my friends around, to keep me on my toes, to keep asking me big questions, to not let me get in solitude inside the cell of my house, no matter how weak I felt, like, to keep, I don't know, laughing and questioning and being big kids in tree forts together. And not putting myself in solitude away from the people I love, no matter how much longer I was going to be here. So starting my Reiki again and starting mantras again, and also opening up myself to highest good. I realized I had done a lot of cord cutting activities in life and return to cinder activities in life and these kind of things, but very rarely have I opened myself up to all energy that wishes me well, to all energy that wishes me for my highest good, for me to have my God energy, for me to have my source energy. I don't want to dissect words here, but whatever, you know what I'm talking about. And in doing Reiki again and opening myself up, it was almost like every prayer group that was praying for me, every pure feeling and every well wish and every perfect intention, it was like I got to feel it all. It was like I was allowing myself to open up to the highest good again. And instantaneously, that next morning, when I woke up, I felt all the way better. Like, my mental and my spiritual were all the way intact. And I would continue to do my mantras and, you know, put my hand on my third eye and my hand on my heart and tell my body that I live here. This is my vessel. And every time I started to see fear and dread and have thoughts of that in my brain, because I was so aware that I was the observer of my thoughts and I wasn't my thoughts. Anytime fear or dread would cross my path, I knew it was the cancer dying and not me. I was positive of it. I was positive it was the cancer and not me. And so I went to, I finished up that first round of chemo, and I got to kind of see my flow of things. I got to kind of see my ups and downs, and I had a lot of introspection. And I was mean to a lot of people. I owed a lot of people an apology. I just was so pissed at the world, and everything just seemed so insignificant and not important to me all of a sudden. Like everything I had done in my own life just seemed so insignificant. And when I really thought about it, the best thing that I'd ever done in my whole life was the people that I knew. Like I have such, and I would compare it to anyone. If you take your stable of friends, and I put my wife in that stable of friends, you know, if you take your stable of friends, of everyone that you know and love, and they love you back, and you share camaraderie, and you'd actually call them a friend. If I put all my friends in a stable, I would compare them to anyone else's group of friends. Hands down, I have the most magical, just deepest, coolest, just survivors, airheads, kids. Like, I just know such amazing fucking people. And I was mean to some of those people. And I owed some people an apology. And I took out, because of how well they know me and how comfortable our friendship had became, they were like the path of least resistance, where I let out my ugly on them. And I owed them an apology. And I felt bad about it. And I had realized that I had done that in little ways in life, of things that weren't important, or ways that you let your stresses, your own fight or flight or freeze or fawn out on other people. And I didn't want to do that. I didn't want the legacy of me to be this cunt at the end. Even if I was dying, I didn't want to leave like this. I wanted to be me at the end, whatever that meant, but not scared. I mean, not that fear isn't a normal reaction to everything I was going through, but it just wasn't my reaction. It was like I was LARPing an energy of what I was supposed to be feeling. Like, you have cancer. And so as that treatment went on, and I'm also still healing from my spleen surgery, I realized the last week of that first chemo, I started to feel a little like myself again. I started to have energy again. My body was coming to, I was gaining weight, and like my muscles were coming back. I was just like a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel. And then I started my next chemo, and even walking into that treatment, all the nurses were like, wow, look at you. You look like a whole different person. And I was like, and I had a shaved head by the time. I had shaved my head in between the first chemo and second, but I was thicker, sturdier. I was stronger. And I was like, I feel like a different person. And sat in there, got my little treatment, got the little chair I wanted. You know, there is chemo side effects. There's so many, like, they tell you, like, chronic fatigue is one of the side effects of chemo. And you think, tired? I can be a little tired. That's fine. It's a different kind of tired. It's like all of a sudden the 8 pounds of your human head becomes, you become so aware of how heavy your head is. And you're just, and I'm not a person that sleeps a lot. If you listen to this show, you know I'm kind of an insomniac. So I'm up all the time. And insomnia is another side effect of chemo. And I feel like my cat's running around here meowing. So if you hear it, that's what it is. Insomnia is another side effect of chemo. And I was feeling bad for normal people. Like, I live in insomnia and it's extra. So I was thinking of like people I know that have a good sleep schedule, how this would drive them batty. And, you know, you, it's like, starting the second chemo too, I should tell you. My wife and I both heard it this way. And you know how sometimes the doctors tell you different instructions than, that are on the side of your pill bottles? Well, both of us had heard take one steroid a day for the 5 days leading up to your chemo. But really, it was take five steroids a day for the 5 days of your chemo. So the another reason that the first chemo was so extra rough on me is because I did it steroid free. And so the second chemo I was starting, I had five steroids a day. And so I was shot out of a cannon. I had more energy the second chemo going in. And I also felt like it probably helped heal me a little for my surgery, that influx of steroid. So it was so night and day difference, my mental, my spiritual, my physical. Going into the second chemo, I just knew that I was going to win. I should say, if you're watching this on video, because I will release the video a few weeks after the audio. I'm giving myself that grace, but I might have it out a couple of days after the audio. It's the next day. I've showered in between and changed clothes and shit. So if you're watching it, all of a sudden I just changed clothes. But I got interrupted yesterday and I really wanted to sit down and finish telling you guys this. So even if the story gets a little sporadic in between, it's because I didn't want to listen to every single thing I already told you guys. So I kind of just wanted to stay in, you know, time, like in order. So having the five steroids a day for those first 5 days, I felt so much stronger. And I kicked the second chemo's ass. And in between this time, I had a PET scan coming up. And the PET scan was gonna scan me from the tip of my head all the way down to about my knees. And it was going to see if I had cancer anywhere else, in my bone marrow, in my brain, any of that shit. My meditation became, I'm a miracle baby. I heal myself. I'm a healer. I've always been a healer for other people. I'm going to heal myself now. And so I just really started to meditate on that. I should also say I'm very claustrophobic as a person. And I'm claustrophobic and constriction. So it's not just being in a tight space that will get me. If somebody tries to bind me up, or if I'm wearing a shirt that all of a sudden I'm like, this shirt's too tight, I just have to rip that shit off. Like, I just have a weird like thing with like constriction and claustrophobia. So the PET scan, you have to go into this tube. And inside this tube, you have to stay in there for a half hour. If you've ever had, I don't know, MRIs, CAT scans and things like that, sometimes they all have tubes that are kind of similar. So, usually in life, if I've ever had to have one of these done, I get a Valium. And I will also say, I'm not typically into any kind of drugs. I don't take painkillers or anything, but Valium I enjoyed. So when they were like, do you want a Valium or something to go into this machine? Do you want us to prescribe you this? I'm like, you know what? I've made it this far in life. I'm overcoming all this stuff right now. I'm going to overcome my claustrophobia. I'm going to meditate the whole time inside of this machine. No, you don't have to give me anything. I tell my Reiki practitioner, Bianca, my Reiki master, I tell her all this is coming up. So she's with me too during this time. She gives me a mantra kind of during this time too. And, you know, you're going to picture healing light coming from the, in the top of your head all the way through your body. And I'm just like, I'm just going to meditate for a half hour. I'm going to shut my eyes. I'm not even going to see the inside of this machine. When I was picturing healing light come inside my body, I don't know, it could have been the machine, but my whole entire eyeballs lit up. Like as I was picturing it come in from the top of my head and drip down my crown and go into my eyeballs and into my sinus cavities and temples and into my ears, as I could see it cross my eyes, my whole eye frame lit up. And I just stayed in meditation. And I should tell you too, they're like, put your arms above your head to go into this machine. I have a port, like, you know, like I told you about. And so I can't really raise my arms above my head right now. And I'm like, can I just put them by my side? And they're like, yeah, sure, you can put them by your side. And then they Velcroed me in. So I wasn't only going into this machine, I also had like a straight jacket on so my arms wouldn't move. So I had to be inside this machine. I meditated the whole time. I knew it was going to be clean. I knew it was going to be clean. I just need a clean scan. That next week, we're going to my doctor's. And I just kept picturing the doctor walking in and the surprise on their face when they told me about this. I just kept picturing how stunned they're going to be, like, you've only been doing this a few weeks. We can't even believe this. We're shocked. This is going to be a fiction. You know, like I was writing the story in my head. And the whole drive there, I told my wife, I'm like, it's all good news. We're going to get so much good news. It's all good news. So we go there. She walks in, my nurse practitioner, and she's like, holy shit, your scan's all clean. Like if you were a normal person, you don't even have a normal person, but whatever she said in medical terms, if you were a person that didn't have cancer, you don't even have enough in your body for it to show up on the scans. Like it's still showing up in a little bit in one area, but it's not even showing up on the scans. You're all clean. And like my wife was so happy, she started to cry, but I already knew it was already going to happen that way. That was already the way I was picturing it. It was almost like I didn't even have a release of emotion, because if you're manifesting appropriately, you have to feel the way it feels when it happens. So I already felt that way. And yeah, it kind of, I was going to sit with you guys earlier, but when I got the all clean, it kind of, my energy shifted a little bit. I had to re-get my head on around this. And I've had another chemo since the all clean treatment. And it is what it is, because part of my Reiki mantra too is you're already healed. You just have to honor the journey, honor the journey, I guess. So I finished my third chemo. I'm a week out from my fourth. I'm still bald, but I really want to go play with my friends again. I'm having energy. I'm slowly able to work out. I'm putting on weight. My muscles are filling back in. And my favorite thing to do and my favorite hobby and my favorite pastime is hang out with you guys and hang out with my friends online. And, you know, it's I couldn't wait to get back to it. I thought about it so much. And then this whole thing's been going on for over a year. And it's just really invaded on my time to do my favorite thing. It's I've had to cancel so many different dates that I was going to record because I had a migraine or because I had a pain in my side or because I was too tired, but I didn't know it was all of this. And so now I'm here now and I don't have a pain in my side. I don't feel my spleen for the first time in over a year. And I'm tired today. Like the chemo's worn me out. I might even go nap after this, but I might go hang out with the spiders tonight, or I might go on with my Maria. And I really just wanted to come and sit with you guys and fill you in at what's going on. And it feels so friggin' great to sit here and say that I'm all good and I'm healthy. And I have a lot of really fucking amazing people around me. And, you know, my friends and family have all just been incredible and touching and funny. And one of my favorite is I was sitting out front and I was talking about this episode with my Maria. And I was like, yeah, I really want to sit down with my audience and kind of record this little journey and fill them in and everything going on. And she's like, oh, really, Chaney? Your 6-week cancer journey. And she wasn't being a dick. She just always makes me laugh like that. But it is kind of like, yeah, a magic. And I'm not trying to say, you know, my father died of cancer. And my sister said when she first walked in, when I got home from the hospital, I look like him, just skinny and like, you know, aged and dying. And she just had such a bad feeling about it. And I love my dad, you know, like he's back here in a picture somewhere if you're looking at the video episode. But I'm stronger than him. and I'm braver than him. And I'm not saying if you've lost people from this that they're not strong or brave, but energetically, there is something that you just have to know. And it also doesn't mean if you did lose someone, it wasn't their time to go. Or I don't know what happens after this. And I'm not comparing what my journey is to anybody else's journey. Like, I didn't realize how many types of cancer there were and how many types of chemo there were and how many types of, and I only know mine, and I only know my small walk, and I only know my side effects, and I only know my, you know, mental strife, and I only know how it hit me in the spiritual, and I only know how my friends reacted to it. But I also had this piece, like a little bit, where I was being selfish, where you can't cut everyone out because, yeah, I had cancer, but like my wife's wife had cancer. My mom's daughter had cancer. My sister's sister had cancer. All my friends out there, my friend has cancer right now. Like, it's not just you going through it alone. Yeah, you have it in you, but it's affecting all these other people. And sometimes they're not brave enough to bring up the things that they need to say, but you might be brave enough to. And so if you have the words sometimes or can clear the pathway to allow them to say the words. And I love yous are easier to come by, and hugs are easier to come by, and not to everyone. I don't want to kiss people on the cheeks like I'm in fucking Europe or in LA. Like, oh, nice to meet you. Kiss on both cheeks. I'm not phony like that, but a real hug and real I love yous and just realness. You know, it's been just as good of like setting the boundaries for myself. I've been able to love harder because I feel safer. I'm able to feel vulnerable. And I want to feel vulnerable with you guys. I don't want to be in the closet about having cancer. I want you all to know it. And I want to, you know, set up my little picture journal. When I planned all this, I thought it was going to be a longer of a journey. My last chemo treatment is the first week of July. It would be July 4th, but that's a holiday. So I don't know if it'll be before or after. And then I think my hair will come back. And I used to care. I used to be like, I'm not going to be anywhere until my hair comes back. But I wear hats all the time and don't really care. So yeah, I'm pretty shiny and bald under here. If you are going to watch the video version of this, I am going to put up pictures so you'll be able to see it. But I'm not going to rip my hat off. Yeah, I also got a couple of wigs. So who knows? Who knows what I'll be showing up in on other people's podcasts coming up. But I also have big plans here, and I'm really grateful that I have you guys. Your energy was felt before you even knew it. Like, some of you are hearing this right now, and I was already thinking about you hearing this months ago. It's like quantum healing. And I'm grateful, so fucking grateful, that sitting down and talking to you guys, it's all good news. And it's 2023, and we're magic as fuck. And I didn't come this far just to come this far. And there's so many out there, so many people out there that I still want to meet, and so many experiences that I still want to have. And yeah, I feel really fucking blessed, really fucking humble. And so honored that you're listening to this, and hopefully that you'll listen to other stuff that I create for you. And so, yeah, this is my cancer journey. Thanks for listening. I love you guys, and I'll talk to you very, very soon.
So she has been Cheney, and now she's off to smoke a blunt. See you next Tuesday, you fucking cunts.